Welcome to the AFP Report. This is your host, John Friend. Today is Tuesday, April 19th, 2022. This is the 8th edition of the AFP Report, a podcast series where I will be interviewing reporters and contributors to American Free Press, America's last real newspaper, as well as other special guests. Please consider subscribing to American Free Press if you are not already. Subscription details can be found at AmericanFreePress.net. Today I am joined by Conrad LeBeau, an independent author and publisher. All right, Conrad LeBeau, welcome to the program, sir. How are you today?
I'm fine, thank you.
Thank you very much for joining me. You are an independent author and publisher, and you maintain a website called LeBeauBooks.com, which we will have linked in the post for this podcast on AFP's website. You have advertised in American Free Press in the print edition of the newspaper for quite some time, and the books you offer for sale are fascinating. You've written quite a bit about alternative health and natural health topics. I know you've written about the COVID-19 pandemic and the concept of money creation, for example. So just to get started, can you please just introduce yourself to our listeners and talk about how you got involved in the alternative independent media and publishing business?
Well, it started a long time ago. Sometime around 1980, I was a real estate broker. And at the time, Paul Volcker was on the Federal Reserve Board, and he raised mortgage rates to around 18%. And I lost my interest in selling real estate. Somehow I got involved with the Wisconsin Society for Educated Citizens. It was a tax protest group. And I began doing a lot of research when I knew about the role of the bankers and how they control much of the media and the politics here in the United States. And I actually learned that from my father back in the 1950s. And go back further, he was a follower of the father Charles Coughlin, the radio priest from Detroit, who gave weekly addresses during the Great Depression and wanted the government to print its own money and spend it to create jobs. And I do have a copy yet today. I have a copy of Charles Coughlin's book on money questions and answers. It's not the easiest to understand because so much of the terminology in banking is confusing and is very difficult to understand. And I won't get into the details of it. I did write a book on money creation, from the Knights Templars to Wall Street bankers. And I did that a few years ago and advertised that in American Free Press. It's available at LeBeauBooks.com, and it's really a primer on understanding how our monetary system works, how it's controlled by big banks, the Federal Reserve, and big commercial banks, and people basically behind the scenes on how the banking system actually works. And I'm not going to tell you everything in there, but I will tell you that the banking system is primarily a record-keeping system. And 95% of what we use today is not Federal Reserve notes. It's not coins. It's actually digital dollars, although digital dollars are not defined in law as lawful money. But they are used as legal tender. And they occur in various forms. Checks are a form of digital dollars, money orders, bank drafts, credit cards, debit cards, electronic funds transfers. So you're dealing with everything that's stored in a computer. So you want to know where most of the money of the country is, or so-called money. It's not in the vaults. It's not in the cash register. It's in the computers. We have pretty much a computer-driven system. And it's just a system of numbers. It's a decimal system. That actually was passed by Congress when George Washington was the first president. Same time they passed the first National Banking Act that Alexander Hamilton promoted, which was based on the model of the Rothschild banking house in England. Now, I'm getting a little off track, but I'm about myself. But I did spend probably in the 1980s, I spent almost 5 years trying to come up with a plan to stop bank foreclosures, and I tried a number of different legal approaches in the courts. Most of them did not work. They may have delayed things. because it would involve such fundamental change to the system that the courts just ran away from it. And then the stress level of what I did actually contributed to my health breaking down in 1986. So I was quite ill for 2 years. It took me 2 years to get my health back. And that got me interested in supplements and in food and diet and health and a whole range of subjects. So I wrote a number of books on that. And during the 1990s, I was marketing products that I made, and then I got into legal fights with the FDA. They took me to court, got an injunction against me, so I couldn't sell some products I made containing hydrogen peroxide because they attached all the claims to it. And it went on and on. And by 2010, even the most simplest and innocuous of health claims, they went after me on that because they were angry at some of the books I had written. Particularly one on the use of hydrogen peroxide in ozone, which sold 150,000 copies over a 30-year period. And they basically they were more interested in shutting down my publications, but they wouldn't actually say that. But they did want to suppress me. So I quit in 2010, decided I didn't want to be drawn into the marketing of dietary supplements because they would scrutinize everything and I'd be like a canary living in a cage. Yeah, I wouldn't want to be so scrutinized. So I got all these books. I've got like six of them I've written. One on the Immune Restoration Handbook. It's co-authored by a medical doctor. One on hydrogen peroxide and ozone is a booklet. Another one, Natural Remedies for Intestinal Health. Another one I wrote on insomnia, fatigue, and cell phone towers and the hazards of microwave radiation. And then the one on money creation. And then I got two other reports, one on the hazards of high doses of synthetic vitamin D3, which can calcify your arteries, and my own experience of experiencing that and how I reversed it with things like vitamin K2, and also one on therapeutic bats, which also helped me with about 20 different types of health benefits, which I reported. So that brings me up to the current level where I'm at now. I'm 78 years old. I'm in relatively good health for my age, but I'm going to continue doing what I'm doing. I have ideas for the future and changes to reform the banking system, but some of these things I won't get into discussing today or how it can be done, but I'm working on a plan to make substantial changes, but it will take time to put it all together. Wow. I want to talk about... Go ahead.
Oh, I was going to say, that's a very interesting story. I recently read Eustace Mullins' book, Murder by Injection, and he talks in detail about how organizations like the FDA and other federal entities went after and continue to go after anybody, you know, these like alternative doctors, alternative health practitioners that were offering supplements outside of the mainstream, Rockefeller-approved pharmaceutical system. And it sounds like you have direct experience with that sort of persecution, which I find very interesting. And I do want to mention real quick before we get into the main topic, if you go to LeBeauBooks.com, you have a great deal. You got six books for sale, including two special reports. So basically eight books for $40. And it's dealing with many of the books you just mentioned. COVID-19 Immune Handbook, the book about the cell phone towers, intestinal health, hydrogen peroxide. So basically you can get most of your books, most of your recent books anyways, for this $40 special, which is really, really a good deal. So I'd encourage listeners to check that out at LeBeauBooks.com. And once again, I will have a link to your website when I post this podcast program. But I find your background very, very interesting, and they're all topics that I am very, very much interested in and have been doing a lot of research on myself over the years. So, I think that's fascinating. But to get into the main topic for today, we were going to talk specifically about the situation in Ukraine and your view of how the international bankers basically played a key role in the 2014 coup that overthrew the then Ukrainian president, Viktor Yanukovych, who was more... I wouldn't necessarily say he was pro-Russian or like a Russian stooge or something like that. I think he kind of leaned towards the Russians And if you listen to interviews with him, in fact, that that documentary that came out by Oliver Stone, Ukraine on Fire, has an extensive interview with Yanukovych, and he kind of explains his position. And, you know, it's very, very clear that this man was not some stooge of the Russians or anything like that. He was basically trying to play, you know, play both sides, play the EU Western side and the Russian side, and get the, you know, get the most from both sides and kind of stay independent and neutral. But this man was overthrown in this coup, this 2014. They call it the Maidan Revolution, which, of course, not only the international bankers played a role in, but it's been proven in spades that the U.S. government played a leading role. Individuals like Victoria Nuland, who continue to set policy at the State Department, were instrumental in what took place then, along with organizations like the National Endowment for Democracy and other Western-backed NGOs. So why don't you give us your basic overview of the situation and what role these bankers played in this 2014 coup, which has been really a key factor in the current situation in Ukraine and Russia's decision to actually invade in late February of this year.
All right. Well, thank you. I did some research on the Ukraine and the Euromaidan and Viktor Yanukovych. I never actually listened to his broadcast, but he was going to join the Eurasian Economic Union, which had closer ties with Russia. And the parliament apparently had already approved a European Union Association agreement. This was pushed by the bankers who wanted Ukraine to be part of the European Union, which would then be the prelude to drawing them into NATO. And I think the purpose, I can tell you that since the, since Mikhail Gorbachev came to power and he introduced his policy on glasnost, which was openness, and he began to basically dismantle the Soviet Union. This dismantling just led to an opportunity for investors, bankers, and other investors in Europe. They wanted to get into Russia and buy out some of their more valuable assets, government-controlled factories, businesses, land, oil wells, natural gas, and the big prize is the banks themselves. As a matter of fact, a very, very fascinating thing happened around 2009. Bill Schneider was the main advisor in international affairs for CNN, which was founded by Ted Turner. And I watched him live about, I think it was either 2009 or 2010. But he was talking about the collapse of the Soviet Union, and he said, businessmen from Europe were rushing to Russia. And he referred to them as Jewish businessmen. And I thought, oh, that's going to go over like a lead balloon. So that comment was made. And 2 weeks later, Bill Schneider vanished from the scenes at CNN. So, and whether he knew or didn't know, he was really referring a lot to the bankers and the corporations controlled by the bankers in Europe. They wanted to take advantage of the chaos and the dismemberment of the Soviet Union to basically go in there and buy out as much as they could and take over control of the banking system. Now, it was years later I read that this was in the Milwaukee Journal Sentinel. Well, there were bankers from Brussels, the International European Union, and they went to the Duma, the Russian parliament, and they told them, and I believe this was while Boris Yeltsin was still president, or it might be in the beginning term of Vladimir Putin. I'm not sure which, but it was close. It was in that era. They wanted him to buy bonds from the European Union and introduce euros to Russia instead of printing rubles to cover government deficits. And the parliamentarians said, well, no, we're not going to buy bonds from you. We can print our own money. We have rubles. We don't need to create debt to help us. And when the banks couldn't get anywhere, that's when they turned their propaganda machines in the media against Russia to demonize Russia and to demonize Vladimir Putin for not surrendering control of the banking system, basically, to the Western oligarchs, to the international bankers in mainly located in Brussels, but you're located all over the world. And so that's what I see as the underlying problem to much of the conflicts in the world. Now, there's a book written by Carol Quigley called Tragedy and Hope, and it has a section in this book on the history of banking. Carol Quigley is a professor. She taught history at Georgetown University, at Princeton, and at Harvard. And she was even praised by Bill Clinton at one point. She commented her. But here's one thing she wrote in her book. So the powers of financial capitalism had another far-reaching aim, nothing less, than to create a world system of financial control in private hands, able to dominate the political system of each country and the economy of the world as a whole. This system was to be controlled in a fashion by the central banks of the world, acting in concert by secret agreements arrived at in frequent private meetings and conferences. And that's a quote from her on chapter 20. And she actually, in the early 1960s, was invited by these bankers in these groups. She actually witnessed many of these meetings, and they were secret meetings, and she objected to the fact that something this important should be kept a secret. So she has notes on it. And basically, she talked about monopoly capitalism, one of the problems of capitalism. We think that capitalism, well, unlimited capitalism is good, but not when it turns into monopolies. Once it turns into monopolies and you don't have competition, then you have basically a moneyed aristocracy. You have a form of autocracy. You have a dictatorship controlled by big money. And that's what much of the politics of the world has evolved into. In fact, 200 years ago, President Thomas Jefferson said he feared that banking institutions were a greater threat to our liberties than standing armies. And he also said that the corporations that grew up around them would eventually own everything. And that's pretty much what happened. John Adams said all the perplexities and distress in America today arise not from defects in the Constitution and Confederation, not from want of honor or virtue, but from the downright ignorance of the nature of coin, credit, and circulation. And that's just one of many quotes. In the 1980s, when I was trying to help people design lawsuits to sue banks to stop farm foreclosures, I created a sheet called Famous Quotations on Money. It's actually four pages of some really, really stunning quotes by leaders from the past and present on the nature of the control of credit and how it's kind of like either expands, creates prosperity, or contracts, creating recessions, and in some instances it gets out of control and creates depressions. Now, the battle over Ukraine, as I see the battle shaping up in the world, you got the world is divided between the group controlled by the international bankers, where they got their tentacles all over. That includes the United States and much of the Western Europe. And then you got another group. You got Russia. You got Iran, which is an interesting one because it's like a democratic theocracy, religious, but also has the elections. And then you got countries like socialist countries like Nicaragua and Venezuela, Cuba, and North Korea. And in fact, some communist countries control their own banks. They don't allow private bankers, but then in their control, they become, shall we say, tyrants themselves. And so you have one evil fighting another evil. And it's kind of like the evils of monopoly capitalism are not corrected by the evils of autocratic communism. They're both wrong. That's why Mikhail Gorbachev, when he seen the Russian system wasn't working, and he said, we need something that's better than what we got in Russia, because now everybody gets a check, they sit home, they go to the store, and the shelves are empty because nobody's working. And so that's the problem. That was the problem in Russia. They wouldn't produce enough because they didn't have enough motivation for free enterprise.
There was no incentive to go out and work and make money. That's
correct.
Yeah.
And in the West, we have the other we can have the other extreme where people work and work, but they never able to get out of debt. They stay in perpetual debt. Now, I see what the oligarchs in Western Europe are trying to do is eat away at the perimeter of the former Soviet Union, now called the Russian Federation, and eventually to overthrow it and to take over the banking system and with it all the spoils that go with it. Take over the media, take over the gas, the oil, and with all that, you take over the politics as well and control the multiple political parties that now exist inside Russia. And we have this conflict really going on a worldwide scale. And that's just from the surface. Beneath it all, I actually believe there's a deeper conflict going on. And I think it's a worldwide battle between Christ and Satan right now. And I think we're in very trying times. And I believe that many of today's headlines were written 2,000 years ago, and you can find them in the book of Revelations. And I do believe that we are fulfilling the page after page. I do think there's going to be divine intervention, and I'm only saying this by inspiration. I don't know if there will, but I have that feeling inside that it's going to happen on a worldwide scale in about 2 years, in 2024. Now, as far as Ukraine, after this revolt that threw out Viktor Yanukovych, there's been reports incorrectly said that Viktor Yanukovych was the fourth president of Ukraine, was picked by Vladimir Putin. No, he wasn't. He was actually elected by the Ukrainian people. So they had election. He was the fourth one. They threw him out because of demonstrations, because he wouldn't join this agreement with Europe, and he was going to sign on to a relationship with Russia and the Eurasian Economic Union and have closer ties with Russia, but not an enemy of the West, not an enemy of anybody. He was going to be neutral, like Finland. But that wasn't good enough. The Western oligarchs, the bankers specifically, they want somebody who is anti everyone. They're anti. They don't want someone neutral. They want their boy in place. And so they got Mr. Zelensky. But what you have is you got basically 8 years of civil war now that followed. When Vladimir Putin seen that someone who was elected by the people of Ukraine was thrown out by agitators from the outside and could have had the help of the CIA, our State Department, and other sources in Europe. But it was inside coup. There have been coups before staged inside. Some of them financed by rich men to achieve certain particular economic and political goals. So you have this civil war, and you've got, about 8,000 Russian civilians killed in the Donbass region?
Oh, the Russians...
About that at all.
That's totally ignored by the Western media. And the Russians actually claim it's much more than that. They say it's closer to like 15,000 since 2014. And basically, my understanding, you know, what happened, you know, after this coup, this Maidan coup, the people in the Donbass, which are, you know, primarily ethnic Russians, they basically wanted autonomy. That's what this is all revolving around, is they wanted autonomy from this totally corrupt Western-backed coup government in Kiev. And that, you know, that's basically what has led to this civil war, this ongoing civil war. And, you know, as you mentioned, you know, thousands of civilians have died over the course of the past 8 years. And it got to the point where it was very clear that the Western powers who were backing Ukraine were just not operating in good faith. And it was a situation that the Russians could no longer tolerate. They continued to push NATO expansion eastward, something that the Russians have been warning about and saying, look, this is our red line. You cannot continue to expand NATO. And this is also something that's conveniently left out of the conversation in the Western media, despite the fact that virtually every major Western diplomat, American, you know, geopolitical thinker and professor. Everybody knew that this was a major problem, a major issue with the Russians, including President Biden, who there's a infamous video that's come out. In 1997, he was speaking at the Atlantic Council, and he was basically explaining how NATO expansion eastward was provoking the Russians and would ultimately lead to a conflict if NATO continued to expand. And that's exactly what's happened. So all of this is totally left out of the discussion. And it's just Russia, Putin, bad. Ukraine, Zelensky, good, innocent angels that never did anything. Meanwhile, Zelensky is a total criminal who has cracked down on media outlets, opposition politicians, opposition political parties, independent journalists. Since this Russian invasion, the Ukrainian regime has kidnapped and murdered countless dissidents and, you know, individuals that were basically, I don't even like to use the word collaborate, but basically individuals that were working with the Russians to ensure that civilians were not going to be killed in this fighting. There have been a number of mayors in smaller Ukrainian cities, particularly in the east, that have been killed. A Ukrainian diplomat who was involved in the negotiations with the Russians just last month was murdered in Kiev. So, I mean, anybody that's you know, sort of viewed as a Russian collaborator or in any way pro-Russian or Russian-leaning is being systematically targeted and either eliminated or arrested or purged. And this is something, again, that goes largely unreported and undiscussed in the Western media.
Well, I agree with you, and you just shared some information, a lot of it that I was not aware of, and some of the atrocities going on under President Zelensky. But I did observe something, and I think it's worth noting. Zelensky is basically, he said that he presents video to the Western world saying that Russia has gone into Ukraine to attack and kill all the civilians. What he doesn't tell you, and what I really think is his secret that he really is not disclosing to the world, is that in the main cities, he did come up with an effective plan to stop the Soviet tank invasion by having Ukrainian soldiers stationed in high-rise apartment buildings that were occupied by civilians, and their sharpshooters could be near the top floor, and they could see the Russians coming, and they would start killing them, and then the Russians figure out where it was coming from. They fired back at the apartment buildings where it was coming from. So you'll see pictures on TV, you see they say there's an unprovoked attack that a tank fired at a apartment building. Well, first of all, I don't think there is such a thing as an unprovoked attack. They were provoked by somebody shooting at them from that apartment building. That's a tactic. When you take the military and you blend them in with the civilians, that's the type of guerrilla war tactic that Al-Qaeda and the Taliban and even ISIS would use, where you don't have a separation of the military from the civilian. You just dress like a civilian and you're part of the military.
Well, that's been a critique of the Zelensky regime and their strategy in this war that a number of independent commentators have been making. They're basically using Ukrainian civilians as human shields, as human hostages in this war. And the Russians have been adamant in their insistence that, look, we are not here to target civilians. We're not here to target civilian infrastructure. They've been very, very careful throughout this entire military operation to avoid civilian casualties and basically limit their operations to targeting Ukrainian military targets. And I think they've been very effective, frankly. I mean, it's a very difficult situation they're operating in. But I think all this, this Western propaganda we're seeing about Russia committing war crimes, I mean, a lot of this is like literally fake stage news. And, it's something that Russian spokesmen and political officials, including President Putin himself, have been openly denouncing and exposing. Yet, you know, again, these statements, these critiques, you know, largely go unreported and undiscussed in the West. It's just extremely one-sided, and that is very, very clear to any objective observer.
Well, the other thing is you you couldn't possibly, from the time of the Russian invasion less than, 7 weeks ago, you couldn't train millions of civilians on how to fight with guns. You're handing out guns at police station. This is pretty much flying by the seat of your pants approach. But the Ukrainian military is pretty well trained. What I really believe in some of the suburbs of Kyiv, where they show all these people in, they look like civilian clothes, all dead, okay? They say there's 400 of them.
The alleged Bukha massacre.
Ukrainian soldiers dressed in civilian clothes. That's what I believe is there. But nobody is investigating, and so it's all speculation.
But right.
Go ahead.
Yeah, no, I was going to say just real quick, this is a subject I've been writing about extensively for the past couple weeks, and it's incredible. I mean, literally, the Ukrainians are just making up these allegations against the Russians. In the Western press, in the Western political establishment, and top Western leaders are just running with it without even confirming anything. Even the Pentagon is out there admitting, look, we cannot confirm any of these alleged atrocities. We're just taking this information on good faith from the Ukrainians. So they're like basically admitting that they don't know anything, if any of this is true. They're just trusting the Ukrainians. And the Ukrainians, that this has been their main strategy, in addition to using, Ukrainian civilians as hostages, essentially. They've been focused on the PR campaign, on the information war against Russia, and they've had a lot of help from the Western press.
Well, it was reported on Fox News, I think, a week ago, that President Zelensky has, emergency powers under the law here, where he now controls the narrative, all the news that's coming out over Ukrainian television, radio, and newspapers.
Absolutely.
So you have an autocracy here now. We have a dictatorship. And those who say, well, who's the dictator? Well, Zelensky is now. And that's what happens in wartime. Whoever the leader is assumes dictatorial powers. It can happen in any country. But the misleading information, the problem is, if you look at the video coverage, and you see it on the nightly news, whether, any one of the major networks, ABC, NBC, CBS, CNN, MSNBC, they'll show dead Russian soldiers, and then they'll show dead, they say what they say are dead civilians. Well, the dead Russian soldiers is probably correct, but I don't believe that the majority of what they say are dead civilians are actually civilians that are dead. Now, some civilians have died, and there have been war atrocities. There's no doubt. And all war is horrible. But I think you have all these, when you have soldiers dressed in civilian clothes and they die, and then you say they're civilians. No, they're not. They're still Ukrainian soldiers. They're just dressed in civilian clothes. That's their camouflage so that they can appear that this is a war against civilians. It would make sense to have a war against civilians. If you look at what Zelensky tried to provoke it because he wanted to motivate the civilians to join this fight, which is why you put members of Ukrainian armed forces into high-rise apartment buildings shooting at Russians on tanks, and then they shoot back. Then you get what they do is they show the Russian reaction, but they don't show how it was provoked by the shooting of the Russian soldiers in the tank. Anybody, whether in a civilian or war, you're going to try to defend yourself against an attack, and that's just as natural. And a soldier's no different. What is Ukrainian soldier or a Russian soldier?
Right. Yeah, exactly. Well, one thing that's been clear is the West has been very dishonest this entire, this entire time, and has largely provoked this situation, in my opinion anyways. And immediately they were imposing these sanctions against Russia. And Russia has been openly talking about using this conflict basically to end this U.S.-led, U.S.-dominated world order. And, there's been talk of trading, commodities like oil and other natural resources in currencies outside of the U.S. dollar system. So it's really had a profound impact on the global geopolitical alignment, certainly when it comes to economics. And, obviously that's something that I'm sure you'd wanted to comment on.
Well, I did hear that Russia is demanding now the European countries pay them in rubles, since they've got basically their own currency for the oil and gas that they're buying. So that would be they would force them to open up bank accounts in Russia. So there is a battle because international bankers are using their sanction powers to try to basically starve all their political opposition. But it's not been very effective. A country as large as Russia has a lot of resources. And they got China also to at least partially back them up with some of their needs. So I don't see it ending. I see the conflict continuing. And I do think eventually, I think the whole world is going to see divine intervention to bring an end to the chaos and the wars. I do believe that that's not that far off the horizon.
Boy, now that is an interesting perspective and one that I can't dismiss. I could see it myself. I mean, we really are living in very crazy times. We have been for a very long time, and things seem to be sort of like coming to a head. And you could be right. I mean, I certainly hope so, because this is a very messed up world, and the American government anyways is playing a key role in all of this. And it feels like the citizens really don't have much say in any of it.
Well, you're right, because it's pretty much like we're on the receiving end of canned news. You know, you try to get information out. A lot of avenues are blocked. A lot of media, just to try to advertise my book on COVID-19, 3/4 of the newspapers I approached were afraid to let me publish it. I'm not even getting to the book on money creation yet, so I don't think that would go over much better when you start exposing the shenanigans of the deep state and the oligarchs on our side of the Atlantic Ocean.
Right, yeah. Well, that's been a major theme for a long time, but especially since this whole COVID-19 pandemic has been rolled out, and then now even more so with the Russian invasion of Ukraine. I mean, any sort of dissent from the prevailing approved mainstream narrative is just simply censored and dismissed as, you know, Russian disinformation or fake news or whatever. You know, it's really incredible that you can't even openly question what the mainstream media and what, you know, the political establishment is telling you about any particular event.
No, you're absolutely right. I think one of the dangerous courses with President Zelensky, if he got everything he wanted, he would set off World War III. He would have the U.S. and Russia on a hot war where we would be on the brink of firing nuclear missiles at each other. This would be a far more dangerous situation than the Cold War and the missiles of October in 1962 that I lived through, when we didn't know for 3 days if the U.S. and Russia were going to be firing nuclear bombs at each other. But, you know, the worst, one of the most dangerous tendencies are for people to give up on diplomacy and give up on prayer, which is the ultimate tool to transform the world into a more peaceful world. And I do think that the time is approaching. We're in a time of tribulation right now. I think the turmoil is going to continue until sometime in 2024. And then I think something will happen that'll get the whole world's attention. It'll stop.
Very interesting perspective. Yeah.
Yeah.
Well, I can't disagree with you. who really knows? It's in God's hands. But I know I will be saying my prayers and doing my best to speak the truth and to stand up for what's right. And I know you will as well. And of course, that's what American Free Press is dedicated to. So with that said, Conrad, we'll go ahead and wrap up. By the way, I should just mention to our listeners, we do plan on doing sort of like a podcast series with Conrad and covering a number of different topics. As we discussed at the very beginning of the program, he has written about a number of topics that we could, you know, focus entire podcasts on. So we'll be doing that in the future. So something to look forward to. So, Conrad, thank you very much. I really appreciate you taking the time to speak with me, and we'll schedule something again in the next couple weeks.
That sounds good, and I appreciate it. And you have a good week, and thank you for the opportunity to do this interview.
Okay, thank you, sir. I will be in touch with you.
Okay.
Okay, bye-bye.
Bye-bye.